It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
God Journey.
Hey, Grandpa.
Hey, how about that?
You got another baby.
And a new one to the brood.
Wow.
So, yeah, my daughter.
A boy.
C-section yesterday. Baby with breech wouldn't seem to make the somersault we were all praying for him to make.
But, he didn't do the kick turn in the pool?
He didn't do it. He wanted to stay upright vertical, and so.
He didn't do that hand inversion. We did that several times with Jonathan.
And did the whole Darth Vader start the car thing? Is that what you mean?
No,
the inversion. It's kind of like a medical term for flipping a kid inside the womb when he's breech.
No, they couldn't flip the kid. They decided not to because of some other issues my daughter was having. So they went the C-section route, and little Austin came into the world, and both mom and baby are doing well.
That's good.
It is fun. Now we got another.
You got red hair or anything?
Not much hair at all, actually. It follows the Jacobson tradition of male pattern baldness.
Mike, the girls do that too.
Well, all of our girls were bald. All our boys have been bald. That's kind of the way it works here.
I think my kids came out shaving.
Really? That far down the road?
I had a 10-pounder and 11-pounder. Those are huge boys.
Well, they are. You should just take them right down to kindergarten, check them in.
Well, we had those little, like, onesies that they put you on.
Yeah, nothing worked.
They were like muscle shirts for our kids. I went to the nurse at the front desk. I mean, totally sleep-deprived after 3 days. I went, you know, do you have a larger one? It's one size fits all. I said, not my kid.
Not that piece of ham sitting over there in the nursery. It didn't fit him.
Jonathan has jowls like Winston Churchill.
Wow.
He's huge.
Wow.
He's just like, will you ever grow into those?
He did.
Oh, he totally did. You look at it, he's just like thin as a rail. Just go like, wow, dude, you were a big thing of blubber.
Wow. So we're all excited around here. We've got grandkids and dogs filling our house now while we...
I noticed. I got quite the greeting when I came in.
Yeah, we got a puppy and two beagles and the big lab. So plus two grandkids and, oh, my gosh.
I was fully sniffed. It's new around here. It was great.
You were fully sniffed?
Yes, it was.
You think you were fully sniffed? Try and go to Canada these days.
Okay, I will. Where in Canada? They sniff you on the border?
I about made my last trip to Canada.
She get strip shirts?
Oh, my gosh. No, almost. When she strapped on the latex gloves, I figured she was going in.
Right.
No, it isn't right.
Right.
I'm telling you what, I have been to Canada numerous times. I've always found them to be very gracious people to welcome us to come visit north of the border, but not this time. I got pulled out of line in I landed in Victoria. I thought, small airport. I get to immigration quicker than going to Vancouver.
They don't have enough to do.
That could be the other problem. I also didn't fit their profile. So.
Yeah, you look like one of them potential terrorists from... I don't know, Quebec.
No, it wasn't terrorism they were looking for, actually.
Oh, I don't want to know. Don't go there.
I'm telling you, it was the rudest entry to a country I have ever experienced, and I've been into person.
You were fully groped?
Not groped, no. I was concerned about the groping when she put on, but she only put on the latex gloves to go through my suitcase and my computer.
I think there's going to be a new syndrome. It's fear of flying, not because of the airlines, but because of TSA.
Yeah, well, this wasn't even that.
Fear of groping.
Customs and immigration. This is going, you know, I've got this problem with when I actually travel, like up to Victoria for the weekend, hang out in the homes with some people.
You take too many electronics.
No, that wasn't the problem. The problem is I can't answer their questions straight. You know, even the little form where it's got, is this a business trip or a personal trip?
And yes.
You could go personal because I'm just hanging out with people, but it is part of what I do. So I checked the business because I know about a guy who recently got kicked out of England.
Because?
He checked it was a personal trip. He was coming to do seminars. They searched his suitcase, found books, found what he got books for. Well, I'm going to be doing some teachings. Oh, so you're actually here on business? And they made him come back to the States. So
what?
Yeah, so I check. I've got
welcome.
Books. I check I got books with me, and I've got – so they pull me out. The guy says, So what are you doing up here? I said, I'm just doing kind of a seminar in a home. Really? What's the name of the seminar? Oh, seminar doesn't really have a name. We got to make up a name
it's
now.
It's called Hanging Out with Jesus.
He said, well, where are you going to be? I said, just with some people. Do you know these people? Well, I haven't met them yet. They just read my books. I want to know if I'd come up, spend some time talking through some of the stuff. What kind of books is it? Well, it's religious. I mean, not religious books, but it's books about spiritual growth and journeying. And okay, I got to have you talk to someone else. So he sends me into a room with a gal who puts on the latex gloves and starts going through everything.
We shall talk about this seminar.
Yeah, books. Books. What are these books about? And how much do they cost? And then she started ringing them all up. Going, I have to charge you duty on these books. I said, okay. And then, are you getting paid for this?
Is their duty to charge you duty?
Yeah, it's their duty to charge me duty. Until it was $12 for the books I had. And she goes, that's too little. We don't charge that. Okay, thank you. But then it was, are you getting paid for this? And I said, honestly, I don't know. She says, what do you mean you don't know? I said, I do this kind of thing. Sometimes people give a love offering. Sometimes they don't. Who bought your ticket? I bought my ticket. You bought your ticket and you run around doing free seminars.
They probably were going to check you for drugs. That's what I would think.
Not yet. No. It was worse than that. So she starts in on my stuff. She goes through my whole suitcase. Everything's fine in there. And she's just going through my computer bag. And then she goes, can you turn your computer on for me? So I turn on the computer. Then she tries to move the trackpad with the glovey things on it. It just doesn't work. No. So she goes, your computer's not working. I said, excuse me. And I just kind of move the trackball. And she said, oh. So she said, I don't know anything about Macs. Okay, I'm not sure it's a Mac issue, but okay. And you don't want to get snarky with these people because they have the power of life and death.
Yeah, they can keep you longer.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to be nice. And she said, do you have pictures on here? I said, yeah, pictures on here. Can you show me your pictures? So I go to iPhoto and show pictures. Who's that? That's my wife, Sarah. Who's that? That's my daughter, Julie. Those are my grandkids. That's my puppy. No, I go through pictures. And she goes, do you have any pornography on your computer? And I'm going, no, I have no pornography on my computer. She says, do you have downloads from the internet? Yes, I've got programs, I've got audio things, I've got all kinds of stuff I download from the internet.
Oh, show me those.
She goes, do you have videos? I have videos. Pornographic videos? No, I have not. I was kind of alerted to this. I had a friend, Dave Fredrickson, from the Family Room Remedial Guys, or Family Room Media Guys. He had a similar experience crossing the border in the fall. So I'd heard about his, so I'm kind of going, okay, this is a pornography search. I guess they've got a bunch of people claiming to be ministers who come to Canada with pornography.
Oh, that's just great.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm a businessman.
Then I got through all that, and then she looked at me and she said, do you have any hate speech placards in here?
Hate speech placards?
Yeah, I guess.
You need to go protest a couple funerals?
I guess those freaks that do funerals from Kansas. Yeah, and I mean freaks. I mean people who don't have a clue who Jesus is.
You know that's not really building any bridges right there.
I'm not wanting to build bridges. The term evil does fit some people.
Oh, okay.
It does.
Whoa.
I guess they went up to the border to protest some Canadian funeral, and they're just dead set on them not.
Just go to Blaine. That's a good border to cross.
But, you know, on the whole pornography thing, what I'm thinking about is, what could I possibly have on my computer that anyone in Canada couldn't download today if they wanted to? I mean, they've got an open Wi-Fi. They've got an open system up there. It's not like Canada. It's not like you're going to get something from me that can't get in some other way.
We have our ways.
I've decided the Canadians are just trying to get revenge on us for us making difficulty for them coming down here and visit us with our TSA people.
Make it difficult for them?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly how?
Where are you going shopping? Why are you here? How long are you going to stay? Yeah, we do.
Three questions?
No. We're already past the 550 burn. I'm trying to move it on, brother. So anyway.
All right.
So I made my last.
Hot off the presses.
So don't invite me to Canada. I'm not coming back. I'm done. It's
Canada's
too much hassle.
Man.
Yeah.
I like it.
If I do, I'm not taking books.
Just
and
parachute
I'm
in.
I could try that. I never tried an air assault. I never tried that.
See?
Do they have an Air Force? Like shoot down airplanes? They don't have an Air Force, do they?
No.
Well, we're going to get the Canadian.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Mexico on that one.
Well, I thought this was interesting. We talked last time we were here about the whole Middle East issue, and, man, that got liberated the day we ran our last podcast, or at least liberated. They've got
it's getting to a nice little boil.
But I thought this was interesting. Chuck Colson in his Breakpoint thing, I remember he's the guy that encouraged people not to read The Shack. Remember?
And then one of his dudes wants 10,000 copies for the prisoners, so I was kind of like confused by that.
Oh, good enough. Not good enough for real people. It's okay for jail.
Yeah.
It's kind of how we do
it's
food,
okay
isn't
for
it?
Us to give it to
It's kind of like stale food. We get to the jail. In any case, he said this about the Middle East.
I think he changed his opinion about it.
He was, maybe that'd be a good thing. I haven't seen published anything about it. But anyway, he was talking about the whole internet free flow of ideas, how that has shaped these Middle East rebellion things going on. He says this, and no tyrannical regime can last long once information begins to flow freely. Today in the Middle East, it seems that the internet is the medium that is fanning the fire of freedom. Now, he's all for freedom of information when it's his information. That's what I think is hilarious. I
thought
Chuck.
You were going to be snarky. Oh, that's just with the border police.
Yeah. See, so I am. I think the whole internet deal and it provides a lot of garbage for sure. But I tell you, that free flow of information, you don't have the old gatekeepers with their swords saying you can't read this and you can't think that way.
It's kind of wild. Just some of the images. You got a whole flock of women in their burkas. Then they got cell phones. He's going, oh my God, it's a funny picture.
Well, you know, the burqa thing's only from 1970. That's not an ancient thing. That was added in the 70s.
I know. See, that's not a good religion. That's just silly clothes.
It's okay. Building bridges again. Are we? Silly clothes. Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
But I agree that the free flow of information.
See, God didn't put those clothes on in the garden.
Not those, for sure. He went with leather.
Yes.
But that's another issue.
Hit me, baby.
Let's not get lost there.
I'm sorry.
In any case, I really do, because I've had people write me the odd letter now and then, said, I read So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore without my pastor's permission, and I got in trouble.
Oh, no.
So it's like, you know, every tyrant needs to control the flow of information. It really does. You can't have people just reading stuff because they might think about stuff.
A book like that will affect the kickbacks out of the offering.
Yeah. Then we got this email. I thought this was interesting, given your recent story about your boy, Jared.
Yeah?
Did you see this from Debbie? It was on the blog. She said, my son used to hang out with stoners. Now he is one of them.
That's my kid.
My son used to hang out with stoners. Now he's one of them and has added porn to the mix.
See, no, that's exactly the danger. You sit there say, wait a minute. You know, bad company corrupts good morals. That's a Bible verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
New Testament.
Yeah, New Testament Bible verse. It's not just all, you know, little mantra. I do think it's a challenge to go, Lord, where do you want me? And I think it's really the issue is, well, who's the prevailing influence?
Yeah.
Is what's drawing you there? Is it the acceptance? Is it are you being led by the Spirit? Or are you sort of just using that as an excuse?
But you don't know if it will continue that way.
No.
Yeah, and I think that this whole the other thing is to, you know, for Debbie, I'm gonna stop my son from hanging out with, and that
that's
work
really
either.
Not gonna happen either.
No, it just kids drive it underground. That's the issue. I think you'd much rather be in a dialogue about your child with your child, even if they're going that way, than to have that so driven underground that you don't know it's even happening until it's too late. So yeah, but it is a big risk. I was reading Luke 15 this morning. Jesus hanging out with the, you know, the unsavory characters, and he was, yeah, bad company corrupts good morals. Keep your eyes open, but at the same time, he was able to hang out there. And
yeah, but where should salt be? Where should light go? And if it can go there with a smile. I think so oftentimes, some of the best conversations I've ever had are with the people that appeared to be the most hostile or the most unfriendly, and when they're met with an actual honest, you know, kind of dialogue where it's like, hey, I'm kind of curious what you think. You know what? That takes them so off guard. If it's a little evangelistic tool, I think they're going to see that too.
Yeah.
But I think where it's genuine, I don't, you know, I think that's where it's like, you know, well, gosh, what are we building in our kids? Are you protecting them from something, or are you empowering them to be someone? It's a totally different deal.
It is a different deal, and there's risks in it. Absolutely, there's risk in it.
I just don't think you get bumper guards for everything.
Yeah, but some people wish they had.
Okay.
You see old Billy Ray Cyrus? He wishes now.
Whoops, there it goes.
Is he he's a whoop there it goes? No, that wasn't him.
No, but I'm.
Interesting interview with him this week, because his whole family's falling apart. You know, he's Miley Cyrus's dad, for those that don't know, and He regrets Hannah Montana ever happening for what it's done to his family. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's a kind of a strange deal.
Well said, the more famous she got. And I think, you know, your kid gets a chance at a TV show. That's exciting. That's great. That'd be fun. Now you don't know it's going to become your major huge thing where everybody's Miley Cyrus people. And then he talks about.
Yeah, but dad's there on set. He's one of the characters in the show.
He was. But then people started to surround his daughter that weren't the most fabulous. And now she's gone on the road. His wife's left him. And I thought this, the reason I brought this up, not because I'm enamored with Miley Cyrus for sure, but it said this at the end. He said the Cyruses and their six children were all baptized before leaving Tennessee for Los Angeles to inure themselves against evil and believe Satan is attacking his family. So, did the baptism not work?
You're being snarky.
I am being snarky. Well, it seems like baptism is hocus pocus.
No, you know what? I'll bet you anything. I think the sad reality is I'll bet you anything the genuineness behind that was probably very real. But there isn't some sort of magic in the water.
Yeah, and you don't know.
It's called Jesus in your heart day to day.
Right, and you don't know that what they were genuinely might have even said to this reporter and how the reporter twisted
I'm sure. I mean, yeah. To some degree, I think there's a genuineness. When I read some of that article stuff, he sat there going like, you know what, I'll bet you anything he's speaking very genuinely from the heart to someone to whom none of this makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it does sound like crazy talk.
Well, it does perpetuate. Yeah.
I mean, Jimmy Kimmel has a guy in a red suit playing the devil going. I mean, it's like they already had skits about this.
You watch Jimmy Kimmel? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, sorry. You're down that slippery slope.
You're up late at night, aren't you? No, I just
Dude, that's early. That's the first watch. That's not even going anywhere.
11:30, isn't it?
Yeah, you've already had 3 hours of sleep.
Well, at least one. At least one. It makes you sad, though, to see how that kind of thing can absolutely undermine the love and spirit of a family.
I think what was so funny is to listen to a lot of the dialogue and a lot of the... I think success is the harder test to pass.
Always.
Failure's not that difficult. That's pretty common. Everyone has to kind of come to grips with that. It's success that oftentimes messes you completely up.
Yeah. Particularly when it's outrageous success and people who surround you weren't there when it started, don't know you as a person. They're using you as a money machine.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think the billion-dollar industry surrounding that, she only gets a tiny slice. There's a bunch of other people who have a far greater vested interest in fabricating all that.
And perpetuating all.
Yeah. And you're just going like, okay, that's a pretty heady thing to not succumb to.
No, I think granted that. Someone asked us, said, I've never heard you and Brad talk about baptism. I don't think I have, but I haven't listened to all the archives yet. Not a big question, just a curiosity.
Oh, we have.
I know we have, but people ask me, what podcast did you guys talk about baptism?
I haven't the foggiest clue, but go about 2 years back or something. But it's in there.
Haven't listened to all the archives yet. Well, then that's why you don't know.
I haven't either.
Well, I'm not always excited when people are, you know, looking at us as the answer guys about everything. So what do you guys think about baptism?
That's not a really smart thing to do.
I don't think, just to say it, I don't think it's a hocus pocus event, but I do think it's the way Jesus asked us to open our lives to the Father. It's part of that repentance, baptism, fullness of the Spirit, entering into the life of God. And I think water baptism is a key element in that transition and opening to Him.
It can be extraordinarily powerful. It can also be just dead and wet.
Again, you know, it's the heart, not the water.
Yeah, I kind of go like, you know what? I think when someone understands what baptism is and they kind of are entering in with that sense of, hey, God, I really want to lay hold of everything that you have for me. That can be an incredibly powerful, transformative moment. But it can also be a dead ritual. And I think our lives are like that. It's like I can wake up in the morning and go, God, what are we doing today? With a sense of excitement and expectation to be led by Him? If all of a sudden it's met with silence and all of a sudden, oh no, I sort of go like, you know what? You get up with a sense of, God, what have you called me unto? There's some clear things I know I'm going to do, but leave room and He'll direct you. Or you can wake up in sort of a dead ritual and just, you know, I got to do these things that I think are the right ones. And
or I just wake up and do whatever I feel like doing, and, you know, it's a disaster all the time. Yeah, there you go. Marilyn asked this question, and it's kind of like that baptism question. I'm sure we didn't do enough on baptism for Kara, but Kara, you didn't know what you're actually looking for. So, yeah, we're into it if it's real, and we're not into it if it's a joke. How's that? Oh, this came from Marilyn. Can you and Brad speak into the subject of remarriage after divorce in the body of Christ? This next generation is being affected greatly by this plague of divorce and remarriage giving in our society today, especially in church leadership. Have we as God's people lost the understanding of unconditional love and the joy of restoration brought about by the power of Christ as the center of our lives and families? What kind of image of God are we not reflecting to our spouse, our children, and the world when we can turn our back so easily on one another?
Well, I think the one is that's not new.
It is new. It just started last week. You didn't know that?
No,
you're right. It isn't new.
It's not new. I mean, it's even addressed in the Old Testament where, you know, Moses is, you know, God hates divorce, but it's not as if it wasn't happening back then, too. And I look at it, it's like, well, do we make it the, you know, the scarlet letter that says, well, you know, once divorced, you're forever forbidden from the ranks of anything within the life of the church and the body? And it's like, I think that's equally not helpful.
Well, Marilyn had a little more to her story, because I wrote her back and just said, I don't know, we'll cover as an issue, but, you know, kind of what's your heart about this thing? She wrote back, the reason I asked you guys about the subject of remarriage, this is an interesting story.
Okay.
Tell you, is because my husband divorced me after 35 years of marriage for another woman. We have seven
Ouch.
Children. He came to comfort me and later to restore my family to the fullness thereof, he being God. He said he was the God of the impossible. Nothing was impossible for him. Suddenly my seven children, unbeknownst to each other, gave their life to Christ. Never being influenced by religion, they immediately began to receive from the Lord. My husband is not able to hang on to his girlfriends. They all leave because God has me standing in the gap. Even though I don't live with him, he finds me a safe person to be around every Christmas, New Year's, etc. Because God has healed my heart, he can see I don't judge him, and I speak kindly to him and to whichever girlfriend he's living with at the moment. He knows I pray for him, and I'm staying married until death do us part. One of his girlfriends phoned me last week and said, what part of divorce did I not understand? She left him the next week. Today we have 13 grandchildren, and they too are praying for their grandpa's salvation. Our God is able to do all that he says he will do. God has revealed to me the power of covenant love. It is nothing like human love. It can only be entered into through God's grace and mercy being extended back to the one who despicably used me. By setting my husband free, I was set free. I can love him and others unconditionally like Jesus loves me, no strings attached.
Wow.
My husband, this goes P.S., my husband was a battered child, so he doesn't know or trust the Father's love. He abused me and our children when we lived together, but God is using us to show him that unconditional love looks like. There is genuine love shown to him when we all get together and we can see he is happy. Sometimes we just laugh and play cards until the wee hours. It's like he doesn't want to go home. God is working. Because I wrote about, I had a bit of exchange with this gal because I'm going, man, what you're saying is amazing. It could also be stalking if you're somehow harassing these women who are, and she said, no, I'm not doing any of that. She said, God has just given me a love and told me to stay. I'm married to him. And even though we've got a divorce, I don't recognize the divorce. I'm not rude to him. He comes to my house because he enjoys being here. He feels safe with the kids and grandkids. And someday I believe God's going to restore that. And he was a battered kid, never knew love. So I was like, wow, that's an amazing story.
That's someone who is persistent in loving.
Yeah, this isn't the old, I don't want to give in to this divorce.
It doesn't sound like that at all.
No, it's not that. And yet it isn't the kind of thing you would say, well, every spouse should do this. This is a should do. This is like Penny, who went back to care for her AIDS-infected husband while he passed away, and ex-husband. This is not, that's not what you would tell every wife to do who is divorced by her gay husband. This is what you talked about earlier, I think, about you wake up in the morning and say, God, what are you asking me to do today? And
yeah, there's not a just a bland principle to generally apply. It's kind of like, you know what? In each and every one of those situations, you're talking about individual people and hearts that can get ripped to shreds and the kids and all. So it's like, what do you do there? Well, you invite God in. And it's like, Lord, show us the path to healing and restoration. And it needs human wills to come into agreement with it.
Yeah.
When you get someone that just says, no, I'm not, I'm out of here. No form of coercion is going to change that.
Yeah.
You can love them, but that's an open-handed invitation. That's a, I can't make you. And I think that's...
But most people, don't you think, when they get divorced, would walk away. Just, I don't have enough in my heart to keep loving this man who, A, has rejected me, and, two, keeps moving in with other women. I mean, I just think that's a deal where you go, man, most people would just walk away and say, dude...
Can't do it.
Not can't do it, won't do it, don't feel like you're worth doing it for. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, it's 35 years of marriage. Sarah and I are coming up on 36. So I'm going, man, I can't imagine people living together 35 years and not making that love better. I don't know how you walk away from 35 years of marriage.
No.
I don't get it. But then this is 20 years. She's been waiting for, and not even like she's waiting for something. She just keeps loving him and praying for him and praying for his girlfriends. And she's nice to them. She really believes there's a day of restoration coming where her and her husband are going to be reunited, and the power of him, her loving him, even when she's been so despicably used, will have a great weight in healing the hurt in his heart from being a very young
guy. Yeah, you know what's just so amazing is that whether there ever is or not, look at the power of the testimony of what genuine love really is about. To the kids,
yeah.
To the grandkids, and, the legacy of what I mean. I think so oftentimes love, as exercised by most, is really profoundly self-serving. It's like unless there's the reciprocation, I'm not doing my part.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's kind of like I'm going like, well, that's not exactly love. Love kind of just does it, and love isn't saying, well, what do I get in return? That's a trade.
You know, and honestly, that's why I'm always a little bit, even she uses the term, unconditional love.
Human beings are not real good at that.
Well, to me, there is no love that's conditional. The term grinds me a little bit. What is conditional love? Seriously, it's not love. It's conditional.
It's what most of us do. It's called a trade.
Yeah, it is. And Jesus said flat out, if you do for others, if you invite someone over for dinner, he can invite you back to dinner.
Those that don't know me.
The world does that.
Yeah.
If you can't love people who despitefully use you, if you can't hang in there, even if somebody's going through a broken place in their journey and be ready to love them as they come out of it, then this gospel isn't really real. It's just, I find people who benefit me and I benefit them. And as long as we get along, life's good. I mean, I love the story when I heard more. First time I started hearing it, I'm going, okay, this could be wonderful. This could also be incredibly dysfunctional. But I love where her heart is.
It could be in someone else's life, this is that form of denial that just is not looking at reality and can't process the dysfunction that's occurred, the damage that's occurred. And it's like, I think that's why it's like, you can't just make that observation from outside. If you don't actually know, just the little set of facts could be two totally different worlds.
Yeah.
One great, one awful.
Yeah. What I loved about her heart is what she's doing isn't, God's called me to do this and I'm doing it. It really comes from a revelation. Well, it comes from a revelation of God's love. And so other people say, well, I couldn't do that. You don't have that revelation of love. And because you don't have it, maybe because God's not asking you to do that. It's not like every person, and that's why I kind of...
No, that's the new high jump bar.
Yeah, that. You've been married. It doesn't matter what your wife or husband
does.
That's
the pole vault. That's the real dig.
That's what people do to it. And then people feel guilty. Oh, I've been remarried. Maybe Brad and Wayne aren't going to think it's a good thing I got remarried. And I'm going, you know what? God always intended.
Who cares
what Brad and Wayne think? There's the point. But God made us one man, one woman for life. He did. In our inimitable way of screwing things up, which we as humans do, people
we're not so good at that.
Get through that. And I think even part of the divorce thing was God saying, I'm not going to bind you forever to someone who's abusive or cheating or whatever. I mean, there is a freedom that God gives in the divorce thing. Hates it.
Just the stubborn selfishness of will. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think the most liberating thing of the gospel of God's love is that it's the only thing that can deal with my selfish self. That left unchecked, untransformed, that destroys everything, including me.
Yeah, and God doesn't ask you to be the victim of someone else's unselfish self forever.
Yeah.
I mean, he certainly chose to be the victim of ours. If that's not what the cross is about, I don't know what it is. He chose to, I'll handle that for you. There are times when he asks us to lay down our life for someone in an incredible way. And I really think that's what's going on here. I think Marilyn has been asked to do that. She has a grace for it. I hope she doesn't think this is what every wife should do, and I'm only doing this because the rules say I have to. That's not her heart in it. I do think there's a freedom. And even if divorce and remarriage is the most frightful it could be, it was just indulgence. Jesus still said it's the sin of adultery. It can be forgiven. Life does go on. I mean, it's not the end of the road for people who even went through. I mean, I think the mindset of the religious that always confused me was, as long as you had got all your stuff out before you became a Christian, if you got divorced, remarried before you were a Christian, no problem. You're all good now. But once you become a Christian, see, now the rules apply in a whole different way. And
isn't that funny?
Isn't that crazy?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like we can forgive murderers. And we're like, what? I don't know. I'm not really sure that how you rank sin. I do think that some are worse than others because of the penalties that the Old Testament would oftentimes attach to them.
And the impact they have on others. You murder me, and that has an impact on
them. And it's the lasting
and
one.
And Sarah.
Yeah, you know. I think it's...
But I tell you this. If my son committed murder today and got arrested for it, I'd be the first one down there. My love for him wouldn't change.
Yeah.
I'd be sitting with him through, the hell that your life's going to be now for what you've done. But I wouldn't still want you to go through that alone. I'm going to be with you. And everybody's got that.
Yeah, I think that's where it's like, golly, why is it that, you know, we have our sanctified sins, the ones we'll let pass, and then we have our taboo ones, which like, oh, that's radioactive. Got to stay away from those people.
Which always involves sex or murder. Yeah, that's what I thought it was looking for.
Okay.
I mean, they do, the big ones.
No, but yet, I just sort of think that's the goofy kind of inconsistency of religious environments where it's like, you know, we have our sanctified list that it's like, well, we'll kind of wink at those. And then we have the can't do that thing. And you just go like, exactly at the root issues, how are they different? They're not.
No.
We're not getting to the root issues. We're still just dealing with the foliage.
Foliage.
Yeah, the leaves on trees.
I know what foliage was.
As opposed to root.
This might help answer some of what Ken asked. I have a podcast idea for you. I'm sure there are many Christians out there who, through abuse and or neglect, have very little or no experience with real love on a practical level. I'm sure there are many trying to get beyond survival to healing and wholeness. For those who, like me, have had little affection in their lives, the concept seems to be both inviting and a little more than scary. I think that because of the betrayals, there's a level of trust missing in people like me and others that others already have. Self-reliance can be a bear sometimes because it makes such a great fig leaf. From my perspective, learning to trust that he is really going to love me and take care of me is far more of a challenge to me than trying to get free from the bondage of religious performance.
That's honest.
It's not, yeah. It's not only a greater challenge. You get the one, the other takes care of itself. Once you know you're loved, then you won't have a problem with the bondage of religious performance either. Because that's just an attempt of trying to earn something. But I run into this question and experience a lot when I travel with people who say, I have no experience of being loved in my life. Parents didn't do it. There wasn't a significant adult in my life other than the parents who did it.
I get that. I think that is emotionally real. At one level, I don't, because I'm going like, it's not as if God's absent from that life. And so maybe the love that he has is not registering, or it doesn't have receptors, or those have been damaged, so they're not picking that up. But it's not as if it isn't there. I think that's one of the things that I use as a starting point when you're dealing with hurting people, is just going like, you know what? Oxygen does exist. I'm breathing. God's love is real. It's there. Now we got to find it. Got to find that point of connection where I can recognize it, see it, and begin to start to embrace. Because I think the challenge is I don't have a promise that people are going to love me. So I'm not trusting God for that. That one has never worked.
Yeah.
But I do know that he'll be with me. And I think that, for me, is incredibly transformative. That enables me to deal with the profound inconsistencies when you're dealing with yourself and humans.
Yeah.
That's hard. Those are painful. I think when we sort of expect God to somehow trump people's actions, you're going to get really confused.
Yeah. I think the other thing might be if because I don't know Ken, I don't know his experience, but for some people, I think the fact that I've never experienced real love becomes the excuse the enemy uses to make me feel not look for those receptors, not find a way.
Yeah, it really can invite you to a place of closed door reaction where it's like the handle's on my end, and it's like, wait a minute, God isn't going to rape you. There is not a forcing of his love. It's present. And I think a lot of times it's unrecognized. And it's not a ding to anyone that's hurting.
Right.
I think it's hope-filled. I'm going like, wait a minute, it's here, but I have been perhaps impacted by others in a way that it really has warped my capacity to interpret what's going on.
Right, and particularly if you have been abused or neglected, I think the expectations people have of God's love is usually unfair. If God loved me, he would get me a better job. He would.
Well, yeah, it's like a circumstantial wish list what isn't really the point.
And once I go down that road of I get to define God's love based on my expectation, I think all the receptors are shut down. I don't think you'll find God at that level. God enters into the real place of our life. He doesn't always like, I'm going to rearrange all your circumstances right away. I'm really about rearranging you. I'm really about making you a different person. And learning to see him inside the reality of our lives instead of, I'll see him when he shapes my life the way I want. Or like the Pharisees, they wanted a sign that would say, okay, now I know that God really exists because I have the sign I wanted. And Jesus was pretty clear. It doesn't work that way. If you're looking for a sign, you're going to look for a long time and not see this thing. So you might want to give that up. You might want to just say, God, however you're there, reveal this to me. But the other thing I get out of Ken's letter is this, because I know that Sarah and I, at various places in our lives, have found people like this and just drawn them into our lives. And I've had people just sit there and say to me, you're the first person that's ever showed me a father's love. And I don't know of a better compliment I get than that. And I think that's the real tension that I'm coming to. Sarah and I have used this language in our lives. Every response I have to another human being has one of two possibilities. I can either damage something in them, further the damage, or I can open a door into them being loved. And maybe that's why, maybe that Jesus said, why don't you just go love like you are loved? So for people who have a heart for folks like Ken, invite them into your life. Don't just, hope everybody finds it out there somewhere. When God puts someone around me that's lost in their ability to know they're loved, I'm going to invite you into the orbit of my family. And I'm going to let you have exposure to my life and my family and see what God does to help you to kind of prime that pump of, well, there are people who can love me who don't want to use me. And I do think that's a shock to many people.
Yeah, I mean, I think damage causes people to shut down. That's their only protection. And when someone has been successful at damaging you, you are left with the sense of, hey, well, nobody protected me from this. And so we do kind of immediately transfer that to some guilt on God's ledger, going like, excuse me, where were you? And so I do think that people do need to be sort of loved into a place. You're not dinging them. You're saying, well, I'm sorry, you're missing God's love. Great. That's that. I bet that's helpful.
Yeah.
I think in the whole context of how we're supposed to care for one another. It's kind of funny that in Revelation, where Jesus is kind of, coming to the, I think it's church at Ephesus, going like, you've left your first love. The idea is they went on to something as if there's something more important. And it's like, golly, folks, I think it's pretty darn clear. If we'll just do that in the world, talk about a powerful transformative effect.
Yeah.
Genuine love on this planet, not self-serving trading.
Oh, it always creates a shock in people when you treat somebody with compassion or concern.
Just genuine love.
Yeah. They're like,
what?
Yeah.
What's that about?
This from Kent, and this is probably a good place to end. It kind of brings us full circle. He's been reading, and he's kind of got me reading this guy named John O'Donohue, who's a Celtic poet from Ireland. And he died a couple of years ago, as a matter of fact. But he's got some wonderful ways of just inviting people into clear space. And he was reading John O'Donohue. This is Kent from St. Louis. And said, John O'Donohue, I was reading him lately, was reminded of something I hear so often. I know you do also from people on this journey who are trying to find something more real than they have ever found during their time in organized religion and are still frustrated because they still haven't found anything real. It's just so tragic that many people have spent so much time seeking fulfillment out in the world in things that can never satisfy them. And when they begin to come to the realization and turn to the spiritual life, then they get caught up in seeking something else in a way that is just the same as what they've been doing while seeking it in the world, the material. This really is about coming to a place of resting from all the scrambling and striving and relaxing into the embrace that has been there all along, just waiting for us to return home. And then he quotes John O'Donohue here. Often we can't feel the presence of God because we don't let ourselves be alone. I believe in a spirituality of radical non-self interference. Oh, because we don't leave ourselves alone. I believe in a radical spirituality of radical non-self interference. And if we can just let ourselves be, then we will find that in the act of acceptance, that there's something really subversive. There's nothing so radical and subversive as an act of acceptance. And sometimes when we call off our search and our hunger for God, it is then that we allow ourselves to be found by the divine presence. And then he goes on, humans can achieve many amazing things. The media and the world of politics conditions us to look upward to superstars and to put them on pedestals. And yet all the world's glory is pathetically empty because there is no one on a pedestal that's not pretending. Pedestals are about pretension and falsity. There was a section yesterday when John was describing beauty and that when he shows up in our lives, it is always a gift. And if we try to own it, it will slip away and we will end up something other in our hands that will cause us great harm. That's some cool insight.
Would it be an appropriate summary to say don't try so hard?
Yes. I think just be in that space and let God make himself known. As long as you're trying to determine how he does that or you're trying to make it happen, or, and I love this thing about celebrities, or you put this other people, whether it's you and I or anybody, on some kind of pedestal, you realize you don't really understand what they're about when you do that. When you put someone on a pedestal or when somebody takes the pedestal,
yeah, let me get up there.
it's all about falsity and pretense. Absolutely. Every famous person I know lives a lie. Pretty much.
And wow, that's a pretty shocking statement.
It is a pretty shocking statement. But the people I know who live most genuinely and free are normal people who live deeply in Christ, who love others. And if you even try to put them on a pedestal, they'll climb off so fast you won't know what to do with it. And
I don't know that I fully agree with that. But
I could tell you didn't.
Yeah, I could tell. Like, wow. See,
we're 42 minutes in, so it'd be best if you just agreed with me.
Hey! Folks, have a great week.
No, don't do that.
See, I think fame is a gift that comes from God that most people don't have the foggiest clue why they have it. I think you can be absolutely genuinely who you are, and you can be someone that says, please don't put me on that pedestal. But God can still put a sphere around your life of significant influence that really is akin to fame. It's not the seeking of it. It's not the pandering after for it.
Yeah, but I don't believe that at all about the world's sense of fame and the celebrity that the world does and the people yearning to be the next American Idol and that lust and passion to find a pedestal. I don't think that's true.
I've met different people that we would put in that category that I have found to be some of the most refreshingly real non-seekers of that.
Well, then they weren't seekers of it, is my point. I think it's the culture of celebrity that I'm talking about. You're talking about an individual
that
can survive it.
Well, that's why I kind of got shocked by your statement, because I actually have knowledge of a few people that don't fit that.
Then you obviously know better people than I do. I don't.
Just a couple?
I think people, just a couple with all that you know, that's not many, right?
Well, I'd actually have a longer list than just two.
Well, we don't have time to get through
list
now.
No, you told me it's over.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.